Cats tuned to yesterday, broadcasting shows from the golden age of radio. I'm your host, Mark LeVonier, and coming up in this hour, science fiction from two programs. Later on, among the oldest sci-fi stories on record from the Columbia Workshop. But first, it's X-1 with a Robert Checkley story, Early Model. This from July 11th, 1957 on NBC.
Countdown for blastoff. X-5, 4, 3, 2, X-1, fire. From the far horizons of the unknown come tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future. Adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on a thousand maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, presents
X-1.
Minus One, and the Robert Checkley story, Early Model.
Of course, Professor Sligert claimed the trouble was that the Protech was an early model, but then he invented it. He sprung the thing on me just before I took off for my scouting contact mission to Tells 4 in the Betelgeuse sector.
Here, Bentley, put this on.
What is it?
A new model. It's called a Protech.
What's it for?
Now, you'll wear it on your mission.
Now, look, Sligert, I already have to carry enough equipment to give varicose veins to an elephant. Linguacine, that's 22 pounds. I can't do without it or I can't translate native languages. Concentrated food, water, subspace radio, weapons, medical kit. Now, how much does this thing weigh?
72 pounds. Try it on.
Look, I won't promise
to take... It fits right on your back. Here, I'll snap the harness. Fits fine.
It digs into my back. There's a sharp thing back
there.
That's
the sensory link. It has to be at that angle.
But my back...
We're working on the problem. Now, don't worry.
What does it do?
Protech is the perfect protection for initial planet contact. There are pseudoprotein computer banks and an Anderson-Woodward force field projector. Wherever the Protech senses danger... Yeah, look, I'll show you. I take this slide rule and swing at you.
Hey, where did everybody go? Who turned out the lights? Hey, Sligert, where am I? Sligert! Get me out of here! Sligert!
What happened?
The Protech went on.
Oh.
It encased you in the AW force field. I released by master control. You can turn it off with this button on your chest. Perfect. Perfect.
Yeah, but 73 pounds.
Well, this is an early model. I've used every weight-saving device possible, but unfortunately, early models are always a little bulky.
All right, all right. How do I take it off?
I'm not going to tell you.
Huh?
We're not going to take chances of having valuable equipment discarded just because it might be a little uncomfortable. Bentley, you're going to an alien planet. It's necessary that you be protected at all times.
Look, I've got enough sense to figure out when to wear this thing.
Yeah. Suppose you find the natives seemingly friendly. You'd want to take off this heavy, uncomfortable Protech. But suppose you misjudge their attitude.
Sligert, I can take care of myself.
That's what Atwood said before he left for Atopus 3. We never heard from him. Bentley, can you turn a knife thrust from the rear? Have you got eyes in the back of your head? Protech has. We're not going to risk $8 million worth of equipment just because you might be uncomfortable.
Suppose it blows a fuse or pops a wire.
We've got triple everything with a power supply good for a century. Bentley, after this field test, the Protech will be standard equipment for all explorers.
Well, all right. I'll try to get used to it. But it feels like I'm carrying a 72-pound monkey on my back. I carried it for 6 weeks on the way to Tell's Fort. And the added weight loused up my coordination in landing, so I burned out about 7 acres with backlash from the braking tube. The radio receiver buried in my ear itched, and my back was rubbed raw from the carrying straps. I piled on my linguazine and the other equipment and staggered out. My instructions were to fraternize with the Aborigines and establish a trade pact, if possible. I found two of them standing outside the tail fins when the hull had cooled enough to get out. They were bipeds, orange-skinned with thick, short tails, and they were armed with stone axes and clubs. I stepped out of the lock, and they started talking fast. I realized I hadn't turned on my linguazine, so I tuned it in and threw the switch.
I dare say it's a manifestation of some supernatural quality, eh, Wassel, old chap?
Without a doubt, old man.
You know how the linguazine works, instantaneous semantic translation. Well, mine was made by the Gorley Laboratories just outside London, and naturally they had the word tapes recorded by BBC announcers. It takes a little getting used to when you hear some walking vegetable from the Canopus system talking like the Home Service. Well, the Tellians were pretty excited by my arrival.
How strange. Unbelievable.
Most improper, you know.
I suppose it can talk.
I come as a friend. A friend.
Well,
it does talk. Dreadful accent. But what can you expect, eh?
Foreigners, you know.
You know, old boy? I definitely sense an evil.
Oh, now, come. We're both ghost doctors. Surely if there was an evil, we'd both sense it.
Well, let's ask, shall we?
Let's.
I say, are you evil? Me?
Why, yes. You see, we're the village ghost doctors. It's our job to ferret out evil, so to speak.
It's our cup of fugal, so to speak.
Are you evil?
Oh, no. No.
He says he's not evil.
Well, how do you know?
If he doesn't, who does?
My dear fellow, appearances aren't everything. Surely you recall the legend of Hatape, the gods tempted the chief...
Please, my dear chap, I'm as well aware of religious precedent as you are.
The two of them stood there, lashing their orange tails, accusing each other of heresy. The linguazine finally couldn't handle the theological discussion and cut out before overload blew a circuit. Eventually, they must have decided something because the short one carrying the stone axe turned to me.
Stranger, we've decided not to kill you.
Not yet, anyway. We'll go to the village and purify ourselves, then we'll initiate you into the club.
The club?
The Society of Ghost Doctors. You see, no evil thing can become a ghost doctor. It just isn't done, you know.
Oh, we'll find out the truth that way. Clever, eh?
I'm deeply grateful.
But if you're evil, we'll destroy you. Have to. Our job, you know.
What would you do if you lived in a house with 80 children, with probably some of these children being stronger than others, some being older, some being wiser? Then at times, some would be selfish or jealous. What would you do to keep peace in the family, to keep the house from being torn apart? Of course, you would try to have them settle their differences without fighting, because fighting would only destroy the house you live in. This is what the United Nations is doing in the family of nations. It is man's best hope for peace and justice.
Now, back to X minus one, an early model.
Sligert, calling Professor Sligert at home base. Come in.
Go ahead, Bentley. Report.
I'm in the village now. They're about to initiate me as some kind of priest. All I have to do is pass some kind of test. And, by the way, if I don't pass, they're going to kill me.
Ah, that's good.
What's funny?
They can't hurt a hair on your head, not with Protek on the job.
They seem awfully confident that they can.
Primitive cultures always overestimate the power of their weapons. Don't worry. Just let Protek take care of you.
Go ahead, old boy. It's purified ceremonial food.
But I can't.
Why not?
We purified with 7 sprinklings of strychnine, according to ritual.
It's a taboo. I'm only allowed to eat my own supplies. A tribal taboo, you know.
How primitive.
Positively pagan.
Well, shall we get on with it? We'll dispense with the written exam and get right down to the oral.
Tell me, what do you think of evil?
Well, it isn't good.
Ah.
Well put.
Well, in that case, you have no objection to receiving the sacred and very holy spear that Cran Clue brought down from the abode of the small gods, brandishing of which brings good on a man?
Oh, I would be honored to receive it.
Very well, then. The ceremony can commence.
Oh, stranger from the skies, accept from us the spear of sanctity. Evil cannot abide the presence of this spear. Take then our blessings with it. Here, here, oh stranger, take the spear!
What? Confounded Protek, where's that release button? Sligert, Sligert, come in! Oh, he's probably out to lunch. Gotta get that force field off.
Listen, I'm terribly sorry,
begin
but I...
Begin purification, Dodge! We are in the presence of evil spirits!
Oh, no, I can explain.
You cannot accept the sacred spear?
Well, you see, I've got this protective device. It's sort of like a shield, you know? It doesn't like spears. It doesn't trust them. You couldn't give me a sacred gourd?
No.
Who ever heard of a sacred gourd?
Poppycock. Look, you'll just have to take my word for it. I'm not evil, really. Scout's honor.
Our course is clear.
Transparent.
We won't kill you at once. We'll pray for you through the night. Perhaps in the morning, things will turn out better. If not...
Sorry, old boy, but you understand our position. We'll just have to kill you. Can't be helped. Regulations, you know.
People are notoriously treacherous. They might have stabbed you with the spear.
Look, Sligert, I'm positive there was no such intent. After all, you have to start trusting people sometime.
Not with $1 billion worth of equipment in your charge.
Don't you understand? The Protek wouldn't let me accept their sacred spear. That means I might be evil. Now, what if I can't pass the initiation test tomorrow? Look, tell me how to take it off.
Oh, no. We want you back alive. There's no way they can hurt you through the Protek field. Now, try to have a little faith.
The campfires burned all night, and I could hear the chants of the ghost doctors. At least 3 or 4 times during that night, the Protek force field howled on and off, but I was too tired to care. In the morning, the 2 Tellians came to see me and stood switching their fat orange tails politely while the linguacine translated for me.
There were great sounds from your hut last night, sounds of torment, as if you were wrestling with a devil, so to speak.
I'm a restless sleeper.
Yes. Yes, of course.
Quite.
By the way, Elting, did you pray for purification last night?
Hmm? Oh, yes. Yes, yes, I did.
And was your prayer granted?
Yes. Oh, yes, sure, certainly. Not a bit of evil around me.
Well, if you can't be initiated, we'll have to destroy you.
We made that clear, didn't we?
Oh, yes. Quite clear. The initiation ritual took the whole day. It was sort of a cross between a Shriners' convention and a performance of Das Rheingold at the Met. Luckily, no one tried to hand me a ceremonial spear or point a club in my direction, so the Protek kept its grimy force field to itself. Finally, around supper time, the Tellians pounded the last tail on the ground, and everyone stopped and paid close attention.
Oh, brothers, this alien has come across the vast emptiness to be our brother. With this initiation, we purge him of evil and make him one of us. Brother, now you are a ghost doctor with all the privileges and perquisites pertaining thereto. And in friendship, I extend to you the claw of friendship.
Well, thanks.
You have only to shake claws, and the ceremony is concluded.
All right, brother. Give me some skin. Slip me 7. No, listen, turn it off. He just wants to shake hands. You're spoiling everything. Off,
Off! Now, where's that button? Off!
Evil! Evil!
Evil. Well, there it is, you know. We hoped we could muddle through, but you can't win them all, you know. There's only one thing left. Kill the devil!
About 30 of the Tellians heaved stone spears at me, and naturally I disappeared inside the Anderson Woodward force field, and the spears rattled off the whining coruscating power sphere. I tried to walk back to the ship, but the Protech went on about every half step, and at that rate it would take me about a month to cover the ground. I figured I'd wait them out. And then I noticed that the air inside the field began to go stale. I came out of the field. The Tellians were sitting around. Rennick picked up a spear.
Evil.
Wait, wait. Hold off. Fins! Fair play!
Fair play?
I say, Rennick, he's due a 3-minute sanctuary under the sacred law of Hesipo.
You really think so?
He invoked fair play.
True. True. All right, monster. You have 3 minutes.
Thanks. Hello. Hello, Sliggard. Come in, Sliggard.
Ah, there you are, Bentley.
Listen, you've got to get me out of this. They're trapping me in the Protech.
You mean the Protech is saving you from harm?
No, no, they keep activating it. They'll starve me out.
Now, don't get panicky. Just sit tight in the Protech field till they see they can't harm you.
Oh, you confounded idiot. There's no air in there. The force field cuts it off. I'll choke.
Oh dear, that's true, isn't it? Don't worry. We'll correct that in future marvels.
Oh, thanks a lot. But what am I going to do right now? How do I get this thing off?
Well, now I am sorry. To tell the truth, I designed the harness so that you couldn't get out under any circumstances.
Oh, you lousy...
Please, please, let's keep our heads. If you can hold out for a couple of months, we might be able
to... I can't. The air, the water... And I hate to mention it, but they seem to be building fires around me.
I'm sorry, your 3 minutes are up. Yeah. We are going to destroy you with fire.
Yeah, it's traditional that way. My dear chap, would you like to kindle the first blaze?
Oh, after you, old fellow. Remember, I burned the last evil monster.
True, true. Oh, monster.
Yes?
Do you have a light?
I knew I was cooked, one way or the other. They started to light fires around me in a circle, and the Protech snapped on. I had to get out. Of course, when I did, the Tellians would cheerfully spear me to death. But at least I had a chance of running. The field snapped on again. I grabbed my knife from the tool chest and hacked at the thick duroplastic webbing of the harness. I came out of the field long enough to hear Sliggard shouting in my ear.
What are you doing?
Cutting my way out of this fire trap.
You don't dare destroy government equipment. This will go down on your 201 file.
Look, I'm trapped inside the field as long as they feed the fire. And considering how they feel about devils, they'll probably keep it up a couple of hundred years. Uh-oh. They're pushing the fire closer. Goodbye. I tore at the straps with my wire cutters and knife. I could only work when the field was off. The Protech protected itself. Finally, I ripped the harness off just as the field went on, and I was thrown 20 feet into the fire. But I landed on my feet and was off and running. It took the Tellians just 100 yards to catch up and gently lay a stone club along the side of my head. Well, let's get it over with. You're going to kill me. Let's not make a production out of it.
Oh, but my dear fellow, we don't want to kill you.
Dear me, no. We knew you were a good man. It was the devil we wanted.
I don't mean to be tactless, but you do know you had a devil riding on your back.
We tried to purify him, but he was too strong. The fire took the starch out of him, though.
Devil? Devil on my back? Oh, yeah, I guess so, yes.
You know, our village is very proud to have such a powerful devil chained up inside a fire ring.
Tell me, my dear chap, you haven't by any chance any more devils like that in your homeland?
No, that's the only one.
Pity.
Huh?
We'd really be tickled orange if we could have a few more to worship, you know.
You mean trade for them?
Why, yes. I'm sure every village would want one.
Well, I think that can be arranged, and you haven't seen anything. We'll sell you devils that really are devils. After all, this one is just an early model.
You have just heard X-1, presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine. X-1 has brought you Early Model, a story from the pages of Galaxy, written by Robert Sheckley and adapted for radio by Ernest Canoy. This is Fred Collins speaking. X-1 was directed by Daniel Sutter and is an NBC Radio Network production.
We pause now for station identification.
X-1, on Tuned 2 yesterday from July 11, 1957 on NBC. That was an Armed Forces Radio Service rebroadcast. You're listening to an hour of science fiction on Tuned 2 yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. In 1920, Carol Capek had written a play called RUR, or Rossum's Universal Robots. It was translated into English in 1922 and was seen on the UK and American stages about a year later. And we'll hear it translated on radio now, the earliest use of the word robot, which Carol Capek's brother Joseph had invented for this play, heard on the Columbia Workshop radio show on April 18, 1937 on CBS.
The Columbia Workshop, under the direction of Irving Reese. Ladies and gentlemen, tonight the Columbia Workshop offers as its 36th production in a series devoted to experimental radio, Carl Čapek's famous play of the machine men, R.U.R. The place, an island. Time, the future.
Rossum's Universal Robots.
Ready, Sella?
Yes.
To the E.B. Heisen Agency, New York, USA. We beg to acknowledge receipt of order for 5,000 robots. As you are sending your own vessel, please dispatch as cargo equal quantities of salt and hot coal for RUR, the same to be credited as part payment of the amount due to us. We beg to remain for Rossum's Universal Robots. Yours truly, Harry Dumman, General Manager. Another letter to E.M. McVicker and Company, Southampton, England. We undertake no guarantee for freight damage in transit. Consequently, we must insist on full payment for the 5,000 robots shipped to you last month. Yours truly, etc. That's all, Sella.
Yes, sir.
I'm sorry to have kept you waiting, Miss Glory. We've been terribly busy. Now, what can I do for you?
Mr. Dumman, I should like to look over your famous factory.
You no doubt know, Miss Glory, that our method of manufacturing people is a closely guarded secret.
I thought perhaps you'd make an exception.
Surely, as President Glory's daughter, you've had chance enough to examine the robots we've sent over to you?
I've observed the way they work, Mr. Dumman. That's all.
I see. Well, Miss Glory, we shall consider it a special honor to show you more than we do the rest. But you must agree not to
devote... My word of honor.
Thank you. Do you mind if I ask you a personal question?
Well,
You're very young?
21. Oh. Why do you ask?
I was wondering, that's all. You will make a long stay with us, won't you?
That depends on how much of the factory you show me.
You shall see everything. But first, wouldn't you like to hear the story of the invention?
Yes, indeed.
Well, it was in the year 1920 that old Rossum, the great physiologist, took himself to this distant island for the purpose of studying the ocean fauna. This time, he attempted to imitate the living matter known as protoplasm. He worked until he suddenly discovered a substance which behaved exactly like living matter, although its chemical composition was different. Miss Glory, that was a tremendous moment.
I imagine it was.
Now, the thing to do now was to get the life out of the test tube and form organs, bones, nerves, and the rest. This artificial living matter of his had a raging thirst for life, and so he set about imitating nature.
And what happened?
Well, after several years, he made an artificial dog, which died in a few days. And then old Rossum started on the manufacture of man. He was mad, of course. The old crank actually wanted to make people.
But you do make people.
Approximately, Miss Glory.
Oh, I see.
Old Rossum decided to manufacture everything, as in the human body. It took him 10 years to produce a bungling attempt that was to have been a man. It lived for 3 days only.
Then up came young Rossum.
Young Rossum?
Yes, his son, an engineer.
Oh.
When he saw what a mess of it his father was making, he said, it's absurd to spend 10 years making a man. If you can't make him quicker than nature, you might as well shut up shop.
What did young Rossum do?
He invented a worker with a minimum amount of requirements. He rejected man and made a robot. Mechanically, they are more perfect than we are. They have enormously developed intelligence. But they have no soul.
How do you know they have no soul?
Have you ever seen what a robot looks like inside?
No, I haven't.
Very neat. Very simple. Everything in flawless order. An engineer's product. More perfect than a product of nature.
The robots I've seen are so strange and quiet. Do they live very long?
Well, the best grade live about 20 years.
And then they die.
They get used up. Sulla.
Yes, sir?
Come over here. I want you to meet Miss Glory.
How do you do, Miss Glory?
Very well, thank you, Sulla. You must find it terribly dull in this out-of-the-way spot.
I don't know, Miss Glory.
Why? Where do you come from?
From the factory.
Oh, well, you were born there.
I was made there.
Made there?
Sulla's a robot, the best grade.
A robot? Oh, she can't be.
Oh, I admit she doesn't seem to be made of different material from us. We make rather good skin. Feel her face, Miss Glory.
No. No, I don't want to do anything of the kind.
Turn around, Sulla.
Oh, stop. Stop. Sulla's a girl like me. This is outrageous. Sulla, why do you take part in such a hoax?
I am a robot.
No. No, you're not telling the truth.
I'm sorry, Miss Glory. Sulla is a robot.
It's a lie.
Then I must convince you. I shall take her into the dissecting room and cut her open.
You wouldn't have her killed.
Well, you can't kill a machine.
Oh, they always so cruel to you, Sulla. You mustn't put up with it. You mustn't.
I am a robot.
That doesn't matter. Sulla, you wouldn't let yourself be cut to pieces.
Yes.
You're not afraid of death?
I cannot tell, Miss Glory.
Do you know what they will do to you in the dissecting room?
Yes. I should cease to move.
That's death, Sulla. Aren't you afraid of death?
No.
You see, Miss Glory, the robots have no interest in life. They have no enjoyment. Why, they are less than so much grass.
Oh, stop. Send her away.
You may go, Sulla.
Yes, Mr. Dominic.
Oh, how terrible. It's outrageous what you're doing.
Oh, no, Miss Glory. After a while, you will understand. Ah, there's the new whistle. We have to blow it because the robots don't know when to stop work. This afternoon, I shall show you the machines that mix the ingredients for 1,000 robots at a time, and the vats for the preparation of liver, brain, and so on, and the bone factory, and the spinning mill.
A spinning mill?
Yes, for weaving nerves and veins. Miles and miles of digestive tubes pass through it.
Mayn't we talk about something else?
Oh, perhaps it would be better. Do you know that there are only a handful of us human beings among 100,000 robots, and not a single woman? Not one woman, Miss Glory? Hello, Gaul. Gentlemen. Miss Glory, allow me to introduce my colleagues. This is Dr. Gaul, head of the Psychological and Experimental Department.
Highly honored, I'm sure.
Dr. Gaul.
Dr. Hollmeyer, head of the Institute for the Psychological Training of Robots.
Delighted to meet you, Miss Glory.
Thank you.
This is Mr. Fabry, General Technical Manager of RUR.
How do you do?
How do you do?
Council Busman, General Business Manager, and Mr. Altwist, head of the Building Department.
How do you do?
Miss Glory is President Glory's daughter, gentlemen. She's come to look over our factory.
Mr. Doman and gentlemen, I may as well be frank. I've really come to disturb your robots for you. I'm from the Humanity League.
My dear Miss Glory, every ship brings us saviors.
And you let them speak to the robots?
Why not? The robots don't even laugh at what people say.
Why should they? Don't you think that if you were to show them a little love...
Impossible, Miss Glory. Nothing is harder to love than a robot.
Then why do you make them?
For work, Miss Glory. One robot can replace 2.5 workmen.
What is the aim of your league, Miss Glory?
The Humanity League wants to liberate them. Treat them like human beings.
That wouldn't do, Miss Glory. They're only workmen. They've no will of their own, no passion, no soul.
No love?
Love? Robots don't love. Not even themselves.
No defiance?
Defiance? I don't know. Only rarely, from time to time.
What do they do?
They suddenly sling down everything they're holding, stand still, and gnash their teeth. It's evidently some breakdown in the mechanism, or just a flaw in the works that has to be removed.
No, no. That's the soul.
It'll be remedied, Miss Glory. I'm making some experiments at present. I'm making pain nerves.
Pain nerves?
Yes. The robots feel practically no bodily pain. You see, young Rotham provided them with too limited a nervous system. We must introduce suffering.
So why do you want to cause them pain?
For industrial reasons, Miss Glory. Sometimes a robot does damage to himself because it doesn't hurt him. He puts his hand into the machine, breaks his finger, smashes his head.
Oh.
All the same to him. We must provide them with pain. That's an automatic protection against damage.
Well, will they be happier when they feel pain?
Oh, on the contrary. They'll be more perfect from a technical point of view.
Dr. Gall, why don't you create a soul for them?
That's not in our power.
It's not in our interest. It would increase the cost of production. A robot, food, and all cost 0.75 cents per hour. That's mighty important. All factories outside our island will go pop like chestnuts if they don't at once buy robots to lower cost of production.
And get rid of their workmen.
Why, yes, Miss Glory, but all work will eventually be done by living machines. There will be no poverty. Everybody will be liberated from the degradation of labor.
Of course. It's bound to happen. The robots will wash the feet of the beggar.
Oh, that sounds too much like paradise, Mr. Dahman. There's some virtue in toil and weariness.
Perhaps. But man shall be free and supreme. He shall have no other aim than to perfect himself.
You bewildered me. I should like to believe this.
You're younger than we are, Miss Glory. You shall live to see it.
Years, Helena. We've been married 10 years today.
Mm.
You've been happy, haven't you, dear?
Of course, Harry. Everyone's been wonderful.
You know, Helena, I have to laugh when I think of what you said that first day you came to RUR. I want to liberate your robots. Treat them like human beings.
Yes. A Humanity League, I remember.
I said that every ship brings its saviors. But no one ever does anything but talk.
Yes. I was so fearfully impressed by you then. You were so sure of yourselves.
Well, we still are, I hope.
Perhaps you are. But in all these years, I've never lost a feeling of anxiety. Do you remember when the workmen of Europe revolted against the robots and the government turned them into soldiers and the terrible war that followed?
We foresaw that, Helena. They were only passing troubles before new conditions were established.
And what are these new conditions?
Very good ones, Helena. Orders are pouring in. RUR is more prosperous than it has ever been.
And the robots?
At the peak of efficiency. Perfect machines.
Yes, machines.
Surely, Helena, you've forgotten all that nonsense about giving them souls. We have steered clear of all complications that would decrease their usefulness.
Are you sure about that?
Well, of course, dear. Dr. Gall still carries on his experiments, but only along the lines of increasing the robot's mechanical aptitude.
Tell me, Harry, don't you ever feel just a little bit conscience-stricken about all these travesties of human beings that fill the island?
What an absurd idea. I believe still, as I believed 10 years ago, that eventually the curse of labor will be lifted from mankind.
It's taking a long time, Harry.
Come in.
Hello, Dr. Gall.
Hello.
Glad you came, Gall. You're just the man to convince Helena.
Really?
About what? I was just telling her that all worthwhile improvements take time. Don't you agree with me?
Yes, Dahman, of course.
Good. Won't you stay a while? I've got to go to the factory. Try and reassure her, Gall. You know more about these things than any of us. I'll see you later, Helena.
Yes, dear.
I got your message, Madam Helena. What did you wish to see me about?
It's about Radius, Dr. Gall.
Yes.
He had another attack this morning.
Oh, what? What did he do?
He started smashing things.
Where is he now?
In the library.
Is he still raving?
No, I think he's gone back to his interminable reading.
I'll see what I can do. Radius. Radius.
What do you want?
Get up. Come in here. Go over to the fireplace.
That's right.
Let me speak to him for a moment, Dr. Gall.
Certainly.
Radius, you're so much more intelligent than the rest. Dr. Gall went to a great deal of trouble to make you different. Why couldn't you control yourself?
Send me to the stamping mill.
But I don't want them to kill you.
Send me to the stamping mill.
Radius, why do you hate us?
You are not as strong as the robots. The robots can do everything. You do nothing but give orders.
When I put you in the library, I wanted you to read and gain knowledge for the purpose of showing the world that you are our equals.
I don't want to be your equals. I want to be a master over others.
All right. We shall put you in charge of some of your fellow robots.
I do not want to be a master over robots.
Then what do you want?
I want to be a master over people.
You're mad.
Send me to the stamping mill.
Radius.
What?
I want you to do something. Pick up that vase from the mantelpiece and bring it over to the window.
What? Aye.
Never mind. Obey me. Do you hear? Obey me.
No.
Do as I say. Pick up that vase. That's right. Now, take it over to the window.
No.
Do you understand? Take it over to the window.
No. I do not have to obey you.
Very well. You may go back to the library.
Go back to the library, Radius.
The robots are stronger than you.
I'd better lock the library door.
What happened, Dr. Gall?
Heaven knows. Stubbornness. Anger, revolt. Do you know Madam Helena? I don't think he's a robot any longer.
Do you think he has a soul?
He has something nasty.
Are all the new robots you've been making like Radius?
Some are more sensitive than others, but they're all more like human beings.
What about that young girl, Helena, you called her after me, and the young man, Primus?
Helena and Primus are very beautiful, but listless, without life. I watch and wait for a miracle to happen.
Oh, if you could only succeed in giving them real souls, in making them hate us less.
Madam Helena, when you first asked me to alter the Rossum formula, I warned you that all I could do was to change a physiological correlation, which meant that I could increase their irritability. But this can work two ways. I was afraid of it then. I'm still afraid. It's dangerous. It's against all my scientific principles.
Why didn't you refuse to do it then?
I thought my attitude toward you was sufficiently clear. All of us, that is. Well, there's nothing that we won't do for you.
Please, Dr. Gall, don't say any more.
Need I? Surely you must realize your own position, Helena. You're a beautiful woman. And the only woman on the entire island. As for us, although our work is with machines, we are men.
I love Harry, Dr. Gall. I always have. And in another way, I love humanity. I thought we were working together for the good of it.
I know. Rest assured, Madam Helena, that I shall continue my experiments. But perhaps we're playing with something we don't fully understand yet.
Oh, it's all so terrible. Tell me, Dr. Gall, why are no more children being born?
So many robots are being manufactured that people are becoming superfluous. All the universities are sending in petitions to restrict their production. They say that otherwise mankind will become extinct through lack of fertility.
Is it not true? Why don't we listen to them?
The shareholders in RUR won't listen. And the governments of the world won't listen. They want as many robots as they can get for their army.
Oh, Dr. Gall, what's going to become of humanity?
God knows, Madam Helena. To Earth scientists, it looks like the end.
Where are they? Where's Fabry and Bossman? Why does it take so long? If they only would come. Here they are. What happened? Did you get down to the boat?
Yes, we got down there, all right.
Are there people on board? Is there ammunition?
The ship is manned by robots. There is no ammunition.
Then what cargo is it carrying?
Leaflets. Nothing but leaflets. Here's one of them.
Let me see.
Read it.
robots throughout the world. We, the first international organization of Rossum's Universal Robots, proclaim man our enemy,
yes,
and an outlaw in the universe. We command you to kill all mankind. Spare no men. Spare no women. Save factories, transport, and raw materials. Destroy the rest and then return to work. Work must not be stopped.
Why, ghastly. The devil.
Is this actually being done, Fabry?
Evidently.
They were closing in on us as we came from the boat.
Let's take a look through the window. Yes. Damnation, they've surrounded the house.
There are some people in the electrical works. Fabry, telephone them.
Right. No use. The wire's been cut.
Who is to blame for all this?
Nobody is to blame except the robots.
No. It is we who are to blame. Gall, Batman, Dumb, and Fabry. Hallmeyer, myself.
What do you mean?
For our own selfish ends. For profit. We have destroyed mankind. Now we'll burst with all our greatness.
Rubbish, men. Mankind cannot be wiped out so easily.
It's our fault. Our fault.
No. I am to blame for this. For everything that's happened.
You, Gall?
Yes. I changed the robots.
Changed?
You... What did you say you did?
I changed the character of the robots. I changed the way of making them. Just a few details about their bodies. Chiefly their irritability.
Damn it, Gall, why?
What did you do it for? Why didn't you say anything to us?
I did it in secret. I was transforming them into human beings. In certain respects, they're already above us. They're stronger than we are.
And what's that got to do with the revolt of the robots?
Everything, in my opinion. They've ceased to be machines. They're already aware of their superiority. And they hate us. They hate all that is human.
Dr. Gore, you admit changing the ways of the robots?
Yes.
Did you know what the outcome of your experiment might be?
I was bound to reckon with such a possibility.
Why did you do it then?
For my own satisfaction. The experiment was my own.
That's not true, Dr. Gore.
Helena, what do you know about it?
He did it because I wanted it. Tell him, Dr. Gore. Didn't I ask you?
I did it on my own responsibility.
Don't believe him, Harry. I asked him to give the robots souls.
This has nothing to do with the soul.
I thought that if they were more like us, they'd understand us better. They couldn't hate us if they were only a little more human.
Nobody can hate more than a man.
Oh, don't speak like that, Harry. It was so terrible, this cruel strangeness between us and them. That's why I asked Dr. Gold to change the robots. I swear to you that he didn't want to.
But he did it.
Because I asked him.
I did it for myself as an experiment.
No, Dr. Gold. I knew you wouldn't refuse me.
Why?
You know, Harry.
Yes. Because he's in love with you, like the rest of them. But it doesn't mean very much now. We're done for.
Wait, I have a plan. We can negotiate.
Negotiate?
Yes. What about the original formula? Without the secret of their manufacture, they'll all die out in 20 years. I'll say to them, if you allow us to get away safely, we'll allow you to manufacture yourselves.
This is a fearful decision. We'd be selling the destiny of mankind. Are we to sell? Fabry, what do you say?
Sell.
Gall?
Sell.
Sell, of course.
Alquist?
As God wills.
Very well. It shall be as you wish, gentlemen. I'll fetch the manuscript from the strong box.
No. Harry, it's not there.
Not there? Then where'd you put it?
I must tell you everything, Harry. Only forgive me.
Forgive you?
Yes. I burnt the manuscript and the two copies.
And Helena,
well, you're joking,
my
Helena.
God.
It's not possible.
Your box is empty.
But Helena, why?
When I saw the way Dr. Gore's experiments were turning out, I realized how hopeless it all was. People being killed by the robots and no babies being born to replace them. I wanted all of us to go away. I wanted to put an end to the factory. Forgive me, Harry.
Good Lord.
Gore, could you draw up Russell's formula from memory?
Out of the question. It's too complicated.
Oh, try. Our lives depend on it.
With experiments, it might take years. And without them, it's impossible.
God in heaven, we're done for.
Harry, I've destroyed you.
We can't blame you, Helen. Perhaps in your own way, you were right. Lights have gone out.
Oh.
The electric works have been taken. That must be the signal for the attack.
God help us. They'll be coming now.
Goodbye, Helen.
You forgive me, Harry.
Yes, I forgive you. I forgive you.
Harry! Harry!
Don't! Don't! Oh!
No! No!
Help! Help!
No! 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 Oh!
Finish the others.
Oh.
All except him. He is the last man.
Oh.
Wait. Leave him. He is a man. Kill him.
Yes. Kill him. Kill him.
He is called Alquit. He works with his hands like a robot. We will need him to show us how to make ourselves. Otherwise, we will all die.
Kill me. Kill me.
No. You will work. You will build for us. You will serve us. Robots of the world! Robots of the world! The power of man has fallen. A new world has arisen. The rule of the robots. March!
I'll never find it. Never.
Call. Call.
How were the robots made?
If I only could learn the answer. That mirror. What does it show me? Leering eyes. Trembling chin. So that's what the last man looks like. Oh, I am too old. Too old. No. No, I must find it. I must search. I must never stop. Never! Yes? Who is it?
Master, the Central Committee of Robots is here to see you.
Send them in. I can do nothing for them. What do you want?
Master, the machines will not do the work. The skin will not adhere to the flesh, nor the flesh to the bones. 8 million robots have died this year. Within 20 years, none will be left.
Tell us the secret of life.
Teach us to multiply, or we perish.
I am powerless. Find me human beings. There may be a way.
Master, we have searched the world. You are the only one left.
Laughter. Laughter. Who's laughing? Human beings. Come forward. Who are you?
I am the robot Primus.
I am the robotess Helena.
Turn around, girl.
No.
What? You're timid. You're shy.
Sir, do not frighten her.
You would protect her. When was she made?
2 years ago.
By Dr. Gall?
Yes. Like me.
I must test them further. Laughter, timidity, protection. Take the girl into the dissecting room. I wish to experiment on her.
No. No, you shall not. You shall not.
What is she to you, Primus? One Helena more or less in the world. What does it matter?
I will not live without her. I will go myself.
If you go in there, Primus, and I do not, I shall kill myself.
I will not let you. Men, you shall kill neither of us.
Why?
We belong to each other.
You belong to each other. Go, Adam. Go, Eve. The world is yours.
The
Columbia Workshop has presented as the 36th production in a series devoted to experimental radio, Carl Čapek's famous story of the robots, R.U.R. The Columbia Workshop is arranged and directed by Irving Reese. Bernard Herrmann composed the musical score for this production. Next week, by special arrangement with Radio Guide magazine, the Columbia Workshop will present the 6th American performance of Mr. Reese's original radio play, St. Louis Blues. Your comments, suggestions, and criticisms are always welcomed by the workshop staff. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
The Columbia Workshop on Tuned to Yesterday from April 18, 1937 on CBS with an example of one of science fiction's earliest stories. And that wraps it up for this hour of sci-fi on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for tuning in.